Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Smart Talk. I'm Al Bergeson, your host, and I want to thank all of you for listening to us, no matter how you're getting us, whether it's on a podcast or you're getting us live here in Tucson. We're glad to have you with us. We've had a series on candidates running for this year's mayoralty election, and today our guest is Randy Dorman. Randy, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me here.
It's great to have you here. You know, I had a bunch of specific questions, but as we got talking a little before going on the air, it dawned on me, as a first-time politician,
yes,
there must be some things that you found different, did expect, God, that's exactly what I thought it would be, and others like, oh my God, people would ask me this, or I'm supposed to do that. Just share a little to start us off here about what it's like as a first-timer, what you've learned, what surprised you, and what seemed just what you guess.
Sure. So, I mean, I've been involved in politics for a long time, at least 20 years, longer. And so I had a very good idea of what to expect. I've supported a lot of candidates in the past, And I knew quite a bit about running. So I went into this with eyes open and discussed with my family, made sure that we were all on the same page. So I knew that I'm the type of person, if I'm in, I'm 100-200% in. And that's the way I've really conducted myself. So it's been 24/7 since we announced in February. I knock on doors 3 days a week. We set up our plan, made our policies, the forums. I think there's been about 20 forums and debates. All of that was expected. A couple of things I didn't expect. I've been a huge advocate for the organizations I've been involved with over the years. I was president of the Museum of Contemporary Art for almost 6 years, and I could talk forever about how great MoCA is and the things that we do. And I was chairwoman of the Downtown Tucson Partnership for 3 years. I could talk on and on about that. I am very uncomfortable talking about myself and how great I am. And I had to really get used to that as a politician. People want you to tell them why you're so great and why you'd be the best one for the position. And there was an arrogance that I was uncomfortable with. And so I've had to really work through that. And I have been unpleasantly surprised by some of the politics involved and the ignorance in some, or hypocrisy, I should say, in some endorsements, but I guess that's politics. And I've been disappointed in the lack of transparency and integrity in some of the way the candidates have conducted themselves.
I'm sure every business has its own secrets, differences. So if I was to go into, say, doing smaller boutique condo apartment things in town, and you were to say, Al, what did you learn? I said, oh my God, the construction business. I didn't realize you had to do this. I didn't realize some suppliers don't pay. I didn't realize you had to have accident insurance. And I presume it's the same thing in politics. It's got its own do's and don'ts and whatnot. So, talking about you running for office, let's get down to the brass tacks. Folks,
yes,
give us a call and ask Randy any questions you have about what she wants to do, what you want to see done. 790-2040. That's our call-in number. John's in the booth there. He'll take your name. It'll appear on the screen here. And we'll take your call no matter what it's about. So you have an extensive online list of issues and positions and whatnot that we could barely get through with a dozen shows.
True.
So I want to ask, start with the following. Of all the things that you have on your agenda, mm-hmm, what would be the number one thing on, if I was saying on day one, what would you like to get going? And would you say, Al, you know, if I had to sort them out, here's the first thing I'd want to bring to the council or bring to the people of Tucson.
Sure. Well, first, the reason that I have 14 pages of policy on my website is because I think it's extremely important that we have real, viable ideas for how to move Tucson forward. And my goal is really to turn Tucson into a thriving 21st century city and get us out of the cycle of poverty that we're in, the cycle of constantly deferring to us being a low-wage town and using that as an excuse for not being able to create the quality of life that we want for Tucsonans. So I thought it was important to have really fully developed plans on a variety of topics. But I think so many of our issues stem from the fact that we have a very anemic economy. We have 24% of our people living in poverty, which is unacceptable. And we had 1.2% job growth last year, which is almost flat. It's far below Phoenix, the state, the country. Like, we are not even keeping pace with the country, and it holds us back. I've been a businesswoman for 30 years, and I really understand how to grow both large and small businesses. I'm originally from New York, and I worked in global branding for Interbrand, which was the largest branding firm in the world. I ran our global Procter & Gamble business, which, you know, is a multi-billion dollar company, and I managed billion-dollar brands. And then here, my husband, who's an architect, my husband and I do kind of boutique real estate development, infill, sustainable downtown. So I really understand the range of big to small. We have to grow our economy and create more and better paying jobs.
If we're doing less well as a city than other cities in the state, and let's forget Phoenix, only because the size may allow some synergy that you don't get in a smaller city, or do Phoenix if you want. What is it about Tucson that doesn't have us grow as fast as other Arizona cities?
Well, there are many factors. And the first is we make it difficult to do business here. And historically, we have not had a business-friendly environment. We had companies that wanted to be in Tucson over the past few decades, and we basically chased them to Phoenix. And now, I don't use Phoenix as a model because I think that it lacks the character that Tucson has, but there is a way for us to grow responsibly and create opportunities for ourselves and our kids while still maintaining our culture and character. So that really is key. But we make it difficult to do business. We've had a goal of being business friendly, but I think business friendly is kind of baloney. What we have to really do is support the businesses that are here and our startup community. We have such innovative people starting companies here, but it's hard. It's hard to get traction. And so I have a whole plan to revamp our economic development department.
Let me just cut in for a minute.
Sure.
If you don't mind. Business friendly gets said by a lot of candidates or not. Let's get specific. What specific things we don't do in Tucson would you, as mayor and the city council, or lead them, whatever, it's a weak mayor, strong city council system, but what specific things would you do?
Okay, so the first is...
Beyond generalities.
Yes, I'm going to get specific right now. We have a three-person economic development department right now that is largely focused on incentives. And I think if you want to grow your economy, that's not the format. So what I would do is work with that economic development department, turn it into a hub for all things that our local businesses and startups need to grow. We need to be the source for information on best practices for attracting and retaining employees, on marketing and IT best practices. We need to be the connector to the job training programs with JTED, the Pima Community College, and the U of A. Some of those programs are actually creating a pipeline right into companies, and we need to keep that going. We need to have ambassadors to help those businesses navigate planning and development services, as well as the sign code, because those are things that are challenging for businesses and sometimes add months to opening businesses here. We also should be a connector to both microloans and small business loans. And when I've been out speaking with businesses, they're having a hard time finding employees, and employees are having a hard time finding jobs. So there's a disconnect, and we could have a centralized portal for job postings, not just for Tucsonans, but let's open it up for grads of NAU and ASU as well.
So business is about business, and it's about money and things being financially able or financial support. Now, as I understand it, for downtown development, the city has made a variety of incentives available. What's your opinion of those? And in a very concrete and specific way, it's alleviating fees, deferring taxes. I don't know if people do straight out cash transfers, probably not, but I have no idea. What concretely would you add to the package that we now have to spur people already here? I know that's a big part of your program. And let's say bring people in, dollars and cents wise, real practical, not just setting up nodes where people can find information.
Sure. So the incentives that, so when I moved here in 2001, and I moved right into downtown Tucson, and there was very little going on. Storefront after storefront was empty, and downtown was really an economic drain on the community. So over time, a few months after I moved here, my husband and I and two of our friends bought an old ice factory, turned it into the Ice House Lofts, and that really showed people what was possible downtown, and we're really proud of that project. So as downtown started to be redeveloped and the streetcar was being planned, the city implemented two key pieces let's call it incentives. So one is the infill incentive district, which is a geography where within that geography and downtown is part of it, you can, there's fewer parking restrictions, it's easier to do development, and you don't have as many height restrictions, and it was meant to incentivize development in that area. The other one's called the GPLET, Government Property Lease Excise Tax, and it is an 8-year property tax abatement for projects that can show that if they're created, the benefit of those projects in terms of revenue into the city will be greater than the 8 years of property tax abatement on the current property. So those are two that we need to continue. And some of the other candidates are talking about putting restrictions on that, which would really halt development and I think is a terrible idea.
Getting a signal from John, we need to take a break, folks. So stick with us, because when we get back, I'm going to ask Randy about what best practices for downtown development might be extended to other parts of town. Smart Talk, Al Bergeson, your host, here with Randy Dorman, candidate for mayor of the Democratic Party. Actually, other than an independent, it's only Democrats, who are running for mayor. There's no Republican in the race this time. 790-2040, that's our call-in number. Please call in and ask Randy a question or express an opinion.
And a shout-out to my mom who's listening. Hi,
oh,
Mom.
Oh, I love it. All right, that's great. That's great. So we started talking about what Randy thought was the most important thing on her list of things to do. And she put a better business environment to help bring in and support business here. So let me say, what would you take as the best we used for downtown development, which you're familiar with? And do you think it could be done in outer regions? And so two parts. One, what are the best things we use downtown you'd like to see or not moved out? And two, what parts of town do you think we should take downtown development and do it Flowing Wells, and any other part of town.
Yeah, well, one of the main reasons I'm running is that I have spent a lot of time focused on downtown redevelopment. And I think we need to take that same vision and energy and find the opportunities throughout Tucson in order to really make us thrive. And but around town, it's really different opportunities. So I'm going to answer your question in kind of two ways. First, I think that it is extremely important that we focus on creating density in the downtown core and along the main corridors in town, but that we protect the interiors of the neighborhood. So I just want to be really clear about that. If we create density in the core and along the corridors where infrastructure exists and where people can walk and bike to work or to a restaurant, it is so much more sustainable than if we blade the desert to plan for our growth. And we are growing, so we can't pretend like we're not. Every time we've pretended that we're not growing and didn't plan for it, we've really done ourselves a disservice. So in planning for growth, it has to be density in the core and along the corridors, but preserve the interior of the neighborhoods. So in order to do that, some of the same tools that we've used downtown in terms of allowing for maybe less parking, a little more height, and some financial incentives like the GPLET. But we have to remember, with the GPLET, there's an analysis. It should always benefit the community the most. So it's not that it should just develop, that it should be positive for the developer. It has to be positive for the community. Incentives exist because there's something that we want to have happen and we're trying to make it easier to happen.
Can any developer or any community or anything apply for? Tell us again what GPLAT is.
It's the Government Property Lease Excise Tax. It's an 8-year property tax abatement. And basically what you're saying, you don't pay property taxes for eight years. And so in the downtown area where land prices are high and construction prices are really high right now, that has been the difference between being able to get your projects financed or not, because banks will look at if it's a project that that makes financial sense. And without the GPLET, most of the projects downtown don't right now we're growing.
Any parts of town or any of these main drive, like Broadway or something like that, that you would encourage to apply for no taxes for how long again?
It's for 8 years. It's a state program, and the city decides where that happens. So it is within a certain geography. It was just extended up, I think, Stone and Oracle, because that's where, as a city, we'd like to see investment. There's a new federal program called Opportunity Zones, and money can be invested in 21 areas around Tucson, specifically in these Opportunity Zones. And right now, we have very high occupancy rates in Tucson, which means there's not a lot of housing available, and that's part of the reason that housing's getting so expensive. So we need to figure out ways to create more housing in general, but then also very specifically affordable housing, because we have a real affordability issue because our wages aren't going up enough.
Ideas for that you have?
I do have a lot of ideas.
Just a couple, we're on the clock.
Okay, so you can extend the GPLET into areas and have it focus on affordable housing. You can use these opportunity zones to create funding for affordable housing. You could allow people to developers to have more density in exchange for affordable housing. And we really have to collaborate as a city and county and take a look at federal funding, because 90% of affordable housing around the country is funded by low-income housing tax credits.
Federal money. Let me drill down a little into the weeds, just a little bit.
I haven't been in the weeds enough.
All right. Well, then let's get down to something practical.
Yeah.
You had talked about developing density along corridors, and as everyone knows, you drive down Broadway, mm-hmm. and you can just see all these closed buildings just sitting there. You also say we should be reusing old buildings.
I think that's the best.
And I think you won't agree. How practically does the city and the mayor actually get reuse of buildings? And we've got a break we have to take right now. Gregory, stay on the phone. We're going to get you when we get back. Oh, we don't need a break, John? Oh, perfect. I don't know why somehow I thought we needed a break. I thought I saw him go like that. We don't. So let's go back to that. How do we get people to reuse buildings?
Sure. Well, so we turned a 1920s ice factory into 51 lofts in 2002. My husband and I turned an auto repair shop into our office, which is now net zero with solar and rainwater harvesting. And I was president of the Museum of Contemporary Art when we turned the firehouse downtown into our museum. Reusing old buildings is one of the most sustainable things that you can do, and it's also an incredible way to maintain our sense of character, especially with these old buildings. It's hard to do, and we have to work with planning and development services to create a smoother track for doing so. And I've already talked to them about that and want to continue that work. I mean, as mayor and council, we don't have direct say over that, but we can influence and encourage. And so I'd like to see an easier process for using old buildings.
Okay. As I understand it, the Yaqui Nation has... before we get to that, we've got a caller. So let's take him. Gregory, you're on the air.
Yes, I was going to ask Brandy if she would allow, if she were mayor, a development of Grand Canyon University downtown. People seem to be fighting that solely on the basis that it's a religiously oriented university.
So, you know, Grand Canyon had looked at space downtown at the El Rio Golf Course many, many years ago, and then selected Mesa, I think, and still have not started their construction there. So I haven't heard any recent talk about them wanting to come back here. And that decision was quite controversial because the neighborhood was against it and hadn't really been consulted. But in the end, they selected another city and haven't even started their construction yet. I think with anybody who wants to come to town, we have to evaluate what the benefit is to the city, and where there's a benefit, make sure that there's a way for it to happen. But it has to be beneficial to the city.
Gregory, great question. Thanks. You can stay on the air if you want to ask another one. I just want to ask Randy, if you were making that decision then or now, would you let Grand Canyon take over that property, or would you respect the neighborhood wishes and not?
Well, so in all the developments that we've been involved with, we always start with the neighborhoods first. And I encourage all developers to, before they even create their plans, to have a discussion with the neighborhood, find out what the neighborhood's about, what their values are. We're doing a project in the West University neighborhood, and our first meeting with them, we didn't bring plans. We said, you know, what do you want to see here? What do you not want to see here? What would be additive? What are the things that you like, to really understand? And it makes both the process and the project better in the long run.
Gregory.
So I'm not sure if I didn't answer that question directly, because what I would have done is I would have started with the neighborhood and figured it out from there.
Okay, Gregory, thanks for the thanks for calling in. Do you have any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So this ties into where I was starting to go anyway. As I understand it, the Yaqui Nation is talking about building a casino in town. They had purchased or acquired the Grant Road Cinema area. And the council said that they would support their application. Would you be in favor of a casino in town? Some are against, some are for.
Well, so first, They are on the very first steps of that. I mean, the actual casino, I think, is years and years away. And that is a property that has been underutilized for years, really vacant, which does nobody any good. And it's near the freeway. So I have not looked at it closely. And with every decision I make, I always try to do a very thorough analysis of pros and cons. And I would have to look at where the rights are, what the benefits are, what the negatives are, how the casinos have operated elsewhere in town. And I would always want to make a fully informed decision.
Okay. I have some questions. Some folks that asked, I said, well, what should I ask Randy?
Yeah, what should you ask me?
I looked at her.
I'll answer anything.
All right. So do you support a living wage of $15?
So that is not specific enough a question, because I do believe that everybody should be able to make a living wage. If you're working full time, you should be able to support your family. The question that is often asked is, do you support that for the city? And I think that doing it only as a city would be challenging, because one of my platform points is we have to think of ourselves as a region. Our strength comes from being a region. And if we did that as a city and not with a county, it would be far too easy for businesses to relocate or open up in the county instead of the city. And I think we would end up harming the people we were trying to help in the long run. We need to work on this really at a state level. And we're at $11 right now. And there was the 12 by 20 legislation that is meant to get us $12 an hour by 2020. And we're on track for that. So I would continue to advocate for working as on the state level, I think, is really the right way to do it, not on a city level.
Now, I could imagine someone listening to this saying, I hear you, but I could imagine a lot of things where minimum wage would be, like fast foods and other things, particularly for the university or Fourth Avenue or downtown. It makes no sense to have people go all the way out to the county to get a bite for lunch, so that really there are a lot of low wage jobs that actually could do. If someone also said, are you just kicking the can down the road, or are you avoiding the issue? So if we have to wait for the county, we don't get a minimum wage raise here. If we have to wait for the state, given state politics, we may never get it done. So isn't it better that we at least do the city and take our lead and hope that it spreads elsewhere, rather than waiting for it to be everywhere before Tucson gets in line?
Well, I disagree with your premise. And I just disagree with your premise, because we really do, the most effective way to tackle that is on the statewide level. And of course, I mean, it's not that every business is going to leave the city if you do that. But if you make it harder, and if you create a scenario where people don't want to open businesses here, then in the long run, you are really putting the city at a disadvantage. But again, I always go back to making informed decisions. And we have great economists at the university. And I think that it would be easy to engage them and do an analysis of what would happen if you did it in the city. What if you waited for the county? What if you did it for the state? So that's the first thing that I would do. But I don't think you can just assume that it wouldn't matter and that you'd be waiting forever. I don't agree with those assumptions.
Okay. We're here with Randy Dorman, candidate for mayor in Tucson, talking about her programs and things she'd like to see, and asking her some questions. We got to take a break. Stick with us. When we get back, we're going to ask Randy about taxpayer-supported early childhood education and what her position on that is. Smart Talk with Al Bergeson, here with Randy Dorman, running for mayor of Tucson. We have a caller. Catherine, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I liked Randy's comment just in that last little bit of discussion, that strength is in our region, and we need to be working together more throughout the whole region. And, of course, that leads directly into the annexation question. We all know we'd get more state money coming down if we had more of the area inside one of the cities or towns. And I'm wondering if Randy has any specific ideas about how she could accomplish more annexation. That's always been a very fraught issue.
It is very complex now. And so we have had, we've done a lot of work on annexation, and we have to continue that effort. I think part of the issue, so first, in order to annex an area, it has to be contiguous to the existing city limits. So we can't just go into random areas where there might be opportunity. Like, we can't just annex La Encantada because we want to. We have to build our way up there. And for instance, in the foothills, there are a lot of absentee owners who are renting their homes and don't necessarily respond to the notices and the meetings. And there needs to be participation and approval in order for annexation to happen. Now, the reason annexation is so important is because for each part of Tucson that is not incorporated, we lose that state shared revenue. And in Phoenix, they're about 97% incorporated, and we're only about 64% incorporated. So that's a lot of money that we leave up in Phoenix instead of coming in here. We also have to make it so that the city services are what people want. And when that is the situation that exists, people are going to be more open to annexation. So I would continue with our efforts, strengthen our efforts, and also make sure to create a city government that people trust, that they feel have integrity and are efficient, and create the services that people want in order to facilitate that effort.
Catherine, do you have any other questions? I think she must have hung up. All right. Anyway, Catherine, thank you for calling in with your question. You know, it made me think about bridge and tunnel taxes, or bridge and tunnel people, as the New Yorkers would talk about those people from Long Island and whatever, who come in and use all the damn services of the city but don't pay city taxes. Could we do I don't know what we'd call it, road and whatever tax? If you live in the foothills and you're going to use the services in Tucson, you got to pay a tax.
I would not advocate for that, but I would continue to advocate for annexation for many reasons. I really do think that when you're driving down the street, you don't think, I'm in the county. Oh, no, I'm in the city. I mean, we really think of ourselves as a region. Our strength comes from being a region. We have acted as governmental silos, much to our disadvantage. And I've been told that ego has played a role in that. And so I don't have ego involved in this. And when I'm mayor, I would really like to work on working more cohesively with the county.
When you say ego, you mean people want to think of themselves as Tucsonans and not part of the county?
The comment was directed at leadership.
Ah, without naming anyone in specific in the city for that.
Yeah.
All right, another question.
And really just the fiefdoms and silos that exist.
Gotcha.
And that's just not productive.
Gotcha. Another question. Do you support taxpayer-supported early childhood education, that is, universal preschools?
I do support that for several reasons. And, you know, we had looked at that as a city. The particular proposal was problematic in terms of how it was planned and written. And then we were looking at it from a county standpoint, and that kind of went in circles. But early childhood education is so critically important. Education is our pathway out of poverty. It is, for us to be a thriving 21st century city, we need a well-educated workforce. That starts with early childhood education. You know, study after study really shows the importance of that. And even quite frankly, I mean, it shows the importance of that on our future crime rates. So it not only is an education issue, a poverty issue, it's a public safety issue. So I would really look forward to working with the county and figuring out a plan and a funding stream that makes sense, but making that really a priority.
Another question, kind of ratty, tat.
Ask me anything, I told you.
Oh my God. Affordable housing is limited in Tucson.
Very.
What would you do to help families find stable housing?
So we hit on this a little bit before. We have an affordable housing crisis, really, in Tucson. You know, there's a 2-year waiting list for Section 8 housing. And part of what has happened is the low-income housing tax credits, which has funded so much of our affordable housing, the qualifications have changed and not as much money is available. And so we really need to collaborate with the city and the county and the land trust. And affordable housing doesn't happen without a funding stream. So you can't just force people to make affordable housing. And affordable housing also is particularly challenging when housing in general is challenging. So like I said before, we need to create more housing and then we need to have a laser focus on affordable housing. So working with the city and county departments, I talked a little bit about channeling funds through expanding the GPLET and opportunity zones and giving more density. A lot of cities are facing the same problem and there's some great lessons learned from other places as well.
Ingrid, you're on the air. Questions for Randy.
Good morning. I'd like to go back to the early childhood education taxpayer supported that you talked about a minute ago.
Sure.
How exactly are the children being educated and what in with the early childhood education program? What are they studying? What are they learning?
So with the universal pre-K, I mean, those plans are not fully established yet, but there are best practices from pre-K programs around the world. Usually it's a combination of play-based learning and the beginnings of some academic learning. And the key is really to enable those children to be kindergarten and learning ready when they enter kindergarten, because right now there's such a disparity between how kids are coming into our, especially our public school system, and whether or not they've been read to and engaged to, if they know the ABCs. Just there's a lot of disparity, and a universal pre-K program enables us to give kids from all backgrounds and income levels the same opportunity to enter school learning ready.
I say that what you described a moment ago sounds in a certain aspect of it, like the Montessori method. But I heard recently that children who are in the preschool program really don't do any better in school when they get to some of the higher grades, middle elementary level, that there is no difference. It really makes one wonder why there should be more of a public education, an expansion of public education, an expansion of taxation, when it isn't going to do any good. If there's a problem noticed with a child, but perhaps the family should get involved. Maybe there can be lectures given to parents before their kids are ready for kindergarten. Maybe some public speaking, rather than have this whole extra layer of school grades that we're going to have to support financially.
Well, so there's a few ways that I think about that. First, I've come to realize that we need to support our children at all points of their life. And there are different programs to do that. So in the state, we have something called First Things First that's meant to support children from 0 to 5 years old. And it would, you know, not all families are capable or have the understanding of how to supportively raise a child. And so we have to help. And so we have other state programs. I'll tell you also, as a working parent in the United States, having to manage childcare it's prohibitive for most people. It's an extraordinary expense and amount of time, and other countries treat their children and their parents much more supportively than we do. And it prevents families from being able to have the economic success that they would like. So there's, and the studies that you're citing, you know, there is mixed results on the importance of preschool. I mean, I've seen those studies as well. But normally, if a child has, my understanding is that if a child has a preschool education and they enter school more ready, and if they're supported along the way, they do better. But there are so many points in a child's education where if they fall behind, we make it almost impossible for them to catch up.
Ingrid, thank you for the call and the great question. We got to take a break. Stick with us. Talking with Randy Dorman, 790-2040. Give us a call. I'm here talking with Randy Dorman, candidate for mayor in the upcoming Tucson mayorality. I always have trouble with that word. I don't know why. Mayorality election. Let's do a couple of other quick things. I know you have strong opinions on homelessness downtown, and talk to us about that. And specifically, since you are running for mayor, what you would do that would be different from what's being done before, or what you would add to it, or something like that.
Sure. So I've been chairwoman of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. I was chairwoman for almost 3 years. And when I started, the park outside the library at Hakame Plaza had really become a homeless encampment. And we had experienced that as a city in 2015 or 2016 with the pods that were around downtown that people experiencing homelessness were sleeping in. And in response, instead of helping those people, the city closed the park where that was happening. And we didn't want to do that. I mean, people experiencing homelessness, it's so complex, and nobody wants to be homeless. So while this was happening downtown, and the board, businesses, the people coming downtown were concerned about it, I wanted to make sure that we had a compassion first and enforcement second policy. We have a great CEO, Kathleen Erickson, and she coordinated with Old Pueblo Community Services. They have a housing first model, which is much more effective than the old model of making sure that people are sober first and don't have pets and don't have partners, and then you give them a home. The key is really put people in a home and surround them with services, and then they can really thrive.
And as mayor, to realize that, you would?
Well, what we did in the park is we put a table in the park with a sign that said, need a home. And 5 days a week, we sat with Old Pueblo Community Services and with the people experiencing homelessness, finding them permanent or temporary housing. In 3 months, we had found 85 people permanent or temporary housing, and in 4 months, we had reduced chronic homelessness downtown by 95%. Now, that model is expandable because it was really connecting existing services with people in need. And the mayor ultimately is supposed to be the convener, the connector, the person who really can put all of those pieces together. So what I'd really like to do is get all of our nonprofits together, understand what services we have at hand, what the needs are, and where there are any gaps, I think the city can fill in. But we have an incredible number of existing services and nonprofits servicing the community that aren't always connected to the people who need it. We had 450 housing vouchers that went unused last year.
Now that's good information to get out about something like that. Let me just do a quick follow-up on the statistic. When I read this, it is amazing that 95% of the chronic homeless
in the downtown area.
But that's all of them round up. In effect, 95%, almost everyone. Was it the program where you put them in a house? And so in some sense, is it just moving people? And what were the houses you put homeless people in?
So we,
and how long do they stay there? Is that just temporary and do they end up back on the streets?
So the Downtown Tucson Partnership didn't put people in the homes. We partnered with O Pueblo Community Services, which is one of the, you know, just a fabulous organization in town. They have inventory of housing and services that are really paired together. And so they evaluate what the person needs and put them into permanent or temporary housing and really meets their needs. And they're a wonderful organization. Our program was so successful that we had to take it mobile. We have a little golf cart that we use to patrol downtown, and we use it to go around downtown and help people. And the key is really helping people, not closing the park, which is still closed, the other park. It's all about compassion first and helping people.
Let's switch for our last topic to sustainability. Obviously, the environmental issue is global and larger, but local communities can do things. What would be your leading set of initiatives or positions, or as mayor, Al, you're going to tell me, I would like to bump, bump, bump?
Sure. So I always say I walk the walk when it comes to sustainability, because it is built into the way that I live and the work that I do. So all of the developments that my husband and I do, he designs, sustainability is upfront, from a passive standpoint to where they're built with infill, solar, rainwater harvesting. So We discussed a little bit about density in the core and along the corridors. We have to understand that it's not just how we live, but where we live that impacts us dramatically when it comes to sustainability. So really focusing on that infill development as a way to be more sustainable is huge. We have to make it easier for people to have access to sustainable energy. So I want to work with TEP so that they continue to get more and more of their resources that they get more energy from renewable sources. Because if you don't have the means to have solar panels, you should still be able to know that the electricity you're purchasing has come from a renewable resource. We have a rainwater harvesting matching grant in Tucson, which is great for some people, but you have to have the money up front to make that grant viable. And when you look at the map of where there is rainwater harvesting from the grant, it is primarily north of Broadway. And people south of Broadway need rainwater harvesting as well, and trees. So what I'd like to do is work with Tucson Water to create a sliding scale based on income for that matching grant, so that even if you have a lower income, you don't have to put a lot of money in up front to get a rainwater harvesting system. I'd like to also pair that with a tree program. So the mayor's done 10,000 trees. The number isn't really relevant, but the idea that we are constantly trying to plant trees and water them through rainwater, hopefully, I think would be really key.
I could imagine some environmentalists saying, I get that, but if it's naturally a desert, are we pushing against the river, so to speak, to put trees in and then have to find the water for them?
Well, that's so two things. First, when we're talking about areas where there are roads, that's not the natural desert. So the trees do many things. It reduces the heat island that's been caused by our asphalt on both our roads and our parking lots. And trees next to homes reduce, it cools the home. So it reduces the amount of energy that you need to use to cool your home. It also increases property values. And I mean, trees have so many benefits, but that's one of the reasons that I think it's important to pair that with rainwater harvesting systems. And they don't have to be the tanks. It doesn't have to be an active system. You can do passive rainwater where you just contour the land so that the rain diverts to where the trees are. And it is relatively simple and inexpensive to do and highly effective.
That's a good answer.
Good question.
You were ready for that one. And by the way, folks, that was not a prearranged a setup for her. I thought that would trip her up, but no, she just dealt with that. One last thing.
Okay.
You mentioned an article I didn't read that, tell me if I'm right, and then we only got about a minute left. Tucson leads the nation in cities in which its young people, millennials, leave for jobs after whatever, high school or college or something like that. Is that right? Give us that in a nutshell.
So of the cities over a million people, we were the number one city for millennials leaving as opposed to millennials coming. And that was a very troublesome statistic, but it's part of the reason I'm running for mayor. We do not have enough opportunity for our young people. I have a 15-year-old daughter. I'm afraid she's not going to stay here. And the top cities all had job opportunity. And so while we have a nice way of life here, we do not have enough job opportunity for most people in Tucson. It's really troubling, and it is why I'm running for mayor, why my business background and my community leadership background all feed into being able to create those opportunities for ourselves, for our kids, and ultimately for their kids.
That's a great ending, and I'm going to take that to close it out. Randy, thank you for being on the show. And sharing your proposals and interest to make Tucson better. This is Al Bergeson for Smart Talk. We will be seeing all of you, hearing all of you in the coming Saturdays when we have more additions to the show. Bye-bye.